This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Swuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We are definitely going back into a hard lockdown if there is no urgent and drastic change in behavior.
That's KwaZulu-Natal Province Premier Sally Zikilala on the relaxation of COVID-19 restrictions. Details coming up also. Tanzanians are deciding today whether President John Magufuli gets another 5 years in office. And the Nigerian army has admitted its soldiers were deployed to a plaza where shootings occurred, killing protesters. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Millions of Tanzanians are voting in elections that will decide if President John Magufuli, known as the bulldozer for targeting corruption and critics, will get another 5-year term. Ahead of the polls, though, opposition politicians say authorities have targeted them with violence and intimidation, while some internet and phone services were cut off. Charles Combi reports from Dar es Salaam.
Tanzanians cast their ballots Wednesday in elections to decide if President John Magufuli gets another 5 years in office, despite his government cracking down on critics and the press. Magufuli, who leads the ruling CCM party, is running against 15 challengers. His main one, the Chadema party's Tundu Lissu, returned in July to Tanzania from 3 years of self-imposed exile after surviving an attack where he was shot 16 times. Magufuli has a reputation for cracking down on corruption and pushing large infrastructure projects, but also for squeezing critics and the media. Dar es Salaam residents line up to cast their ballots Wednesday and decline to tell a reporter who they voted for. Kiosk owner Rovita Mitambwe said she was keen to take part in the vote.
Mimi ni raia wa Tanzania na kilicho nisukuma kuja kupiga kura.
She says what motivates her to vote is to choose a president with leadership who will do justice for both her and all Tanzanians. Even before voting began, however, opposition parties accused the authorities of targeting them with violence. The ACT Wazalendo party said Tuesday that security forces have fatally shot 9 people since Monday, some while protesting against election fraud in the Zanzibar archipelago. Tanzanian police said there were no reports of anyone being killed. The opposition Chadema party chairperson Freeman Mbowe tweeted early Wednesday that armed men had raided his hotel and taken 2 of his security guards. Chadema's Lissu said the party's polling agents were blocked from stations and stuffed ballot boxes were seized. Dar es Salaam voter Jackson Balongo told a reporter he witnessed one polling station mixing up voter names.
Ukifungua WhatsApp haifanyi kazi. Ukifungua YouTube haifanyi kazi.
He says voters knew they were going to vote at a certain station and then they found their name wasn't on the list. They phoned their names at another station. This was a problem, says Balongo, that made some people go home without voting. Telephone data and internet disruptions also were reported ahead of the polls, including to social media applications, WhatsApp and Twitter. Tanzanian authorities dismissed the disruptions, saying they were not connected to the election. Official results are expected by the end of the week. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
Amid the ongoing protests in Nigeria over police brutality, mobs of citizens have overrun several government-owned warehouses and looted food meant to be distributed during this year's coronavirus lockdowns. In the latest incident, a mob looted packages of rice, sugar, salt, and noodles Monday from a facility in the Nigerian capital. A similar incident happened on Saturday, as Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Protesters chanted outside a warehouse in Abuja on Saturday as military and police vans barricaded the entrance of the facility. Earlier in the day, mobs of people tried to attack the facility and take away rice, beans, and noodles. They dispersed when security officials fired their guns into the air. But many, like David Ojo, said they wouldn't leave until they got some food.
It's our rights. My neighbor, he won't die for hunger for COVID-19. Baba Onel, they work as security guard for our government place. They suck out with what men do. Baba Onel, they beg me. Now me, they give him beans. Now me, they give him rice. He won't die for hunger.
He was referring to the disease caused by the coronavirus. Storage facilities holding tons of relief materials have been burglarized and looted in 9 states across Nigeria over the last few days. A private sector coalition against the coronavirus, known as CareCovid, had collected tens of millions of dollars worth of aid for coronavirus victims and given it to the government. But many state authorities have halted distribution of the aid since the easing of lockdowns. Some Nigerians accuse authorities of hoarding items while millions of people experience hunger. Abuja residents like Sunday Chukwu say they didn't receive any government assistance during lockdowns.
They didn't share anything here. Maybe they share by themselves. They share by themselves, but they didn't share for everybody. Okay. And these ones now, they are hiding it so that people may leave it. They will now gather them. They will be selling it for the people.
The coronavirus pandemic exacerbated hunger for many of the country's extremely poor, who number some 83 million, about 40% of the population, according to the country's Statistics Bureau. Vivian Belong, the head of Social Action Nigeria, says the amount of food kept in storage is an indication of systemic failure.
To think that certain persons, you know, could lock down this volume, this quantum of food and materials as we are seeing them in their premises, in their custody, and be watching while the people wallow in poverty and difficulty is really unthinkable. I think that it's quite mean. I think it's highly insensitive. And I think that this is a betrayal of trust of the people.
The Nigeria Governors Forum, NGF, on Monday said the looted items in warehouses in some states were being held for vulnerable people, not hoarded. As security officials monitor facilities across Nigeria more closely, various state authorities are making plans to commence distribution. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
The Associated Press reports that Nigeria's army has admitted that soldiers were deployed at the Lekki Toll Plaza in Lagos last week, but denied they fired on protesters last week. Amnesty International says at least 10 were killed. The army initially claimed that troops were not at the shooting site, but yesterday, military spokesman Major Osaba Olanye reversed that position, saying soldiers had been deployed in the plaza to enforce a curfew. He denied they opened fire on protesters who had gathered in the thousands at Lekki Plaza as part of demonstrations against the police unit accused of brutality. A judicial panel is investigating the incident as well as allegations of abuse against the police unit, the special anti-robbery squad known as SARS. President Muhammadu Buhari's government agreed to disband the SARS unit, but the protests have continued with demands of sweeping reforms of police and action against corruption. With a constitutional referendum on presidential term limits looming Sunday, a statement says Algerian President Abdelmadjid Tebboune went into 5-day self-isolation after several senior officials showed symptoms of COVID-19. Senior military officials are deeply concerned about Tebboune's absence, sparking speculation over his ability to continue in power. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shanawi spoke with William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, about how serious is such development for the Algerian political scene.
It is serious in some aspects, but not in others. On the one hand, it's not that serious for the regime. The regime has shown incredible resilience over the last 59 years, and it will likely weather the COVID-19 storm as well without any serious threat to stability or continuity of the oligarchy and the authoritarian system in control. What is confusing is the news about the hospitalization. At a time when the population is continuing to question the veracity of the new leadership, it's imperative that the regime be more honest and forthcoming about what is going on at the top of the regime. And as of right now, we don't know if the president is actually sick and actually sick with COVID-19 in the hospital. It's increasingly clear that the Algerians are both failing to control the disease. The very weak healthcare system in Algeria is very concerning. Algeria has only one intensive care unit bed to every 100,000 people. Also, the International Monetary Fund is forecasting that the economy will shrink by 5%, which is putting a lot of stress on state society. So for all these reasons, Tebboune's attempt to consolidate control and to tamp down on oppositional political activity through this referendum is going to be damaged by this, and the president will be subject to criticism and derision, which will weaken his political efforts.
Algerian military senior officials are deeply concerned about the possibility of President Tebboune's absence, which will certainly spark speculation over his ability to continue in power. Is the Algerian system equipped for a presidential succession?
Yes, the Algerian system is always ready for a potential successor. There are the constitutional mechanisms and then the real mechanisms of the regime to maintain power. And these will kick into place if there is a presidential health crisis. What happens is the constitution puts certain people in power, and then the political establishment anoints a successor that then inevitably wins in the election. And the election outcomes are always known in advance. There was an exception in 1990 and 1991. The elections did not produce what the regime wanted, and that's why we had the coup in 1992 and then a 10-year civil war. But the main dynamic here is that Algeria is not a one-man autocracy with a charismatic leader, but an oligopoly that always has plenty of technocrats and plenty of power wielders in reserve that are ready to step in if need be. The problem here is that if there's a temporary power vacuum or a situation in limbo, then there are questions about who's in charge, you know, from day to day. But that problem will be quickly solved by the regime.
If COVID-19 reached the top Algerian officials, what would that indicate in terms of Algerian response to the spread of the virus with more than 55,000 cases and nearly 2,000 deaths?
Failure. Not as bad as what we had at the White House, where we had 36 people in Trump's inner orbit who contracted the disease, and the issue of the super spreader events. We haven't had that in Algeria. But this certainly deals a blow to Algeria's reputation and the ability of the regime to govern at a critical transitional moment between the popular ouster of the last president and the attempt by the military to recapture some of the regime's lost legitimacy with the population. So it doesn't look good. A government that can't protect itself can't protect its citizens. Meanwhile, despite repeated crackdowns on its leadership, the Herak movement has been distributing PPE and other supplies to areas in crisis, groceries to vulnerable Algerians, and has been sanitizing public areas. So this builds national solidarity for the opposition, also in a way that doesn't put the regime in a good light.
That was William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. In South Africa, they're calling it pandemic fatigue. Despite climbing COVID-19 infection rates, health authorities say increasing numbers of citizens are disobeying regulations designed to prevent the spread of the virus. The state says 716,000 people have been infected so far in South Africa, with almost 19,000 fatalities. The country's enduring the world's longest lockdown, with restrictions such as a ban on large public gatherings still in place. Darren Taylor has more.
in one of the starkest recent demonstrations of public rebellion against the coronavirus laws. More than 300 people partied in a tavern in Eastern Cape Province. Witnesses say no one washed hands, wore masks, or observed social distancing. At least 30 of the revelers now have COVID, with more expected to test positive soon. Ironically, says police spokesman Vish Naidu, the partygoers were nursing students.
We are still in the midst of a state of disaster. We're still in the midst of a lockdown because the virus is very much, you know, among us, and it's very disappointing that people are not adhering to the very limited restrictions that we have.
The Brigadier reminds the bar owners of what happened in the recent past to some people who had COVID-19 but refused to self-isolate, and some who travelled across provincial borders in violation of lockdown protocol.
We even went to an extent of charging them for attempted murder. This is something that we might seriously consider now. We are in discussions with the National Prosecuting Authority on this. Now, the problem is not with the people that have converged there, but it is the establishment that allowed them to converge there. The people that can be prosecuted for this are managers, owners, people running those kind of establishments. And we're going to see to what extent we can, in a more serious way, bring about criminal charges against those responsible.
The province containing areas with some of the highest levels of infection and death is KwaZulu-Natal. Premier Sihle Zikalala says he's sick of seeing people there not wearing masks and hugging and kissing one another in the middle of big groups.
We are definitely going back into a hard lockdown if there is no urgent and drastic change in behavior.
Naidu says the police have observed a negative shift in public consciousness toward COVID-19 safety measures across the nation in the last 3 weeks.
We are getting calls on a regular basis, particularly in areas such as like your taverns and pubs and so forth, where the convergence of people is quite high, and of course the lack of interest in people to wear PPEs and maintain social distancing and so forth. And we are responding and attending to that accordingly.
But, adds Naidu, officers can't arrest every person not wearing a mask. Both the policeman and Zikalala plead with the public to show more care and respect for themselves and their fellow citizens.
The second wave of COVID-19 will be stronger and deadly, not only in terms of taking human lives. It could deal our economy a major blow. We call upon the business community, particularly those who are in the food and hospitality sector, to ensure that there is strict adherence to alert level 1 lockdown regulations. There is no use in chasing profit today, only to be shut down by a hard lockdown tomorrow.
As Naidu puts it, South Africans should realize their country's at lockdown level 1, not lockdown level none. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, but this year, healthcare facilities around the world are focused mainly on the coronavirus pandemic. VOA caught up with a breast cancer survivor in South Africa to trace her progress as she tries to protect herself from COVID-19 while guarding against a recurrence of her disease. Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Leanne Upeter-Beer knew something was wrong. For weeks, the 49-year-old preschool principal had noticed worrying changes in her right breast.
So I kind of went in for my mammogram knowing that I had breast cancer. I could feel it. I knew that that was what had happened.
She was, unfortunately, right. Hers was an aggressive, advanced form of the disease and had already spread to her lymph nodes. She had a mastectomy on one side and started chemotherapy just 10 days later. And continued for 6 grueling months, during which she was unable to work. Now, with the pandemic raging, she takes extra precautions.
Well, I am still very cautious. You know, when anybody's with me, they say, my God, how many times do you sanitize your hands? And I go, what have I got to lose? You know, I need to just sanitize my hands. And I don't worry to say to somebody, please put your mask on, you know, or, you know, just can you just sit a little further away from me?
Medical professionals stress that South Africa's battle against breast cancer continues even as the pandemic rages. Dr. Sadia Lahair is a surgeon who for 2 years ran a reconstructive unit in a breast cancer unit at a government hospital.
A lot has happened in the last decade in terms of awareness, in terms of increasing in our surveillance, doing more mammograms on younger women. And so we certainly have a better pickup rate of our cancers as well that has come to the fore with our increase in screening and awareness. Having said that, there's a lot of risk factors that have also changed, making breast cancer more common.
But Lahair says there's good news.
There have also been changes in how we manage breast cancer and what we can do technological improvements that have allowed us to manage and treat early breast cancers differently.
South Africa is one of the world's most unequal societies, and the health system makes that abundantly clear. Upeter Beer says she knows how lucky she is and is glad that free screening is widely available, but says she still worries about women without her resources.
And while the free screening is fantastic, and I obviously encourage women to be aware and to screen as often as you realistically can, I think it is that post-cancer treatment, that support, that's where the meat of your recovery is. It's not a very glamorous term, but yeah, I feel that makes a big difference to a woman.
Shortly after she was declared cancer-free, the coronavirus pandemic landed in South Africa. Preschools were closed for 6 months. She returned to work when the school opened in September and now faces the task of rebuilding her immunity while also safeguarding the 70 small children in her care. She says she's thrilled to be back at school, even though she knows that her job poses health risks. For her, it's a daily reminder of how precious life is. Anita Pell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Listen to the latest African music? Dance to the best African beat from across the African continent? Then you don't have a problem. Just tune in to the African beat on the Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays at exactly 0900 and 2000 Universal Time. African beat, the show that brings happiness into your homes, smiles on your faces. So join me, your host, David Bandy, Monday through Friday, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time on The Voice of America.
African beat is the best. It's number one. We love it.